By midday, the mercury rises into the 70s, and the high, harsh sun blanches the color out of the west-central Georgia farmland. The tobacco and bean fields south of Atlanta have all gone to seed, or have grown into jungles of switchgrass and cattails. The fossilized remains of farm machinery sunken into the foliage, rusted out and stripped, as desiccated as the skeletons of dinosaurs. Which is why Speed Wilkins and Matthew Hennessy do not notice the secret crop circle east of Woodbury until well into the afternoon. The two young men, sent out that morning by Bob ostensibly to find fuel from wrecked cars or abandoned gas stations, had started their journey in Bob's pickup truck, but now have gone off-road after getting stuck in the mud and lighting out on foot. They cross nearly 3 miles of wagon-rutted access roads before pausing on a ridge overlooking a vast meadow riotous with wild sedges, deadfalls, and a profusion of prairie grass. Matthew is the first to see the deeper circle of green in the far distance, nestled amid the leathery jungle of untended tobacco plants.
"Hold the phone,"
he mutters, shooting a hand up and becoming very still on the edge of the precipice. He gazes out at the distant tobacco fields wavering in the heat rays, shielding his deep-set eyes, squinting against the glare of the sun. A lanky laborer from Valdosta, with an anchor tattoo on his sinewy forearm, Matthew wears the garb of a bricklayer. Sweat-stained wife-beater t-shirt, gray work pants, clodhopper boots pasty with mortar dust.
"You got them binocs handy?"
"Here you go."
Speed digs in his rucksack, pulls out the binoculars, and hands them over.
"What is it? What are you looking at?"
"Not sure,"
Matthew murmurs, fiddling at the focus knob, scanning the distance. Speed waits, scratching his muscular arm, the row of mosquito bites a new development, his REM t-shirt sweat plastered to his broad chest. The stocky 20-year-old is withered slightly from his playing weight of 210 pounds, most likely due to a plague diet of foraged canned goods and scrawny rabbit stew, but his neck still has that steel-belted thickness of a lifelong defensive end.
"Whoa."
Matthew stares through the lenses.
"What the fuck is...
what is it?"
Matthew keeps the binoculars pressed to his eyes, licking his lip judiciously.
"If I'm not mistaken, we just hit the jackpot."
"Fuel?"
"Not exactly."
He hands the binoculars back, then grins at his comrade.
"I've heard it called many things, but never fuel."
They make their way down the gravel slope, across a dry creek bed, and into a sea of tobacco. The odor of manure and humus engulfs them, as thick and redolent as the inside of a greenhouse. The air is so humid, it lies heavy on their skin and in their nostrils. The crops are mostly in their flowering stage, rising up at least 5 feet tall among the tufts of wild grass, so each man is to crane his neck and walk on the balls of his feet in order to navigate. They pull their pistols and thumb the safeties off, just in case, although Matthew saw little or no movement other than waves of khaki green blowing in the breeze. The secret crop lies about 200 yards beyond a gnarled grove of live oaks sticking out of the tobacco like palsied sentries. Through the jungle of stalks, Matthew can see the security fence surrounding the contraband plants. He lets out a little giddy giggle and says,
"You believe this? I don't fucking believe this."
"Is that what I think it is?"
Speed marvels as they approach the fence. They emerge into the clearing and stand there gaping at the long, lush tines of leaves spiraling up rows of mossy support timbers and rusty chicken wire. A narrow path has been dug out beyond the east corner of the clearing, now overgrown with weeds, no wider than a laundry chute, probably once the province of minibikes or off-road ATVs.
"Fuck me,"
Matthew comments reverently.
"Holy shit, we're gonna have a hot time in the old town tonight."
Speed paces along the row of plants, looking them up and down.
"There's enough here to keep us going till the next fucking ice age."
"Amazing stuff, too,"
Matthew says, pausing to smell a leaf. He rubs a piece between his thumb and forefinger and breathes in the musky scent of citrusy sage.
"Look at that hairy fucking butt up there."
"Fucking A, Bubba." We just won the lottery.
Got that right.
Matthew pats his pockets, shrugs off his pack. His heart races with anticipation.
Help me rig something we can use as a pipe.
Calvin Dupree holds the tiny sterling silver crucifix with the coiled chain nestled in his palm as he paces the cluttered storage room in the rear of the Woodbury courthouse. He walks with a slight limp, and he's so gaunt he looks like a scarecrow in his baggy chinos. He feels lightheaded with nerves. Through the grimy glass of a single window, he can see his three children playing in a little community play lot, taking turns pushing each other on a rusty swing set.
I'm just saying. He rubs his mouth and lets out a sigh. We gotta think of the kids. What's best for them?
I am thinking of the kids, Cal.
Meredith Dupree counters from across the room in a voice taut with nervous tension. She sits on a folding chair, sipping bottled water and staring at the floor. They each had a can of Ensure the night before in Bob's infirmary to treat their malnutrition, and this morning they had a full breakfast with cereal, powdered milk, peanut butter, and crackers. The food has helped them physically, but they're still grappling with the trauma of near starvation on the road. Lily gave them the private room a few minutes ago, as well as all the additional food, water, and time they might need to get their bearings.
Best thing for us,
Meredith mutters into her lap,
is the best thing for them.
How do you figure that?
She looks up at him, her eyes red-rimmed and wet, her lips so chapped they look to be on the verge of bleeding.
You know when you fly, how they show you that safety film?
Yeah, and?
In the unlikely event the cabin loses air pressure, you should put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help your kids.
I don't understand. What is it you're afraid of if we stay here?
She shoots him a hard look.
Come on, Cal. You know very well what happens if they find out about my condition. Remember the KOA camp?
Those people were paranoid and ignorant.
He walks over to her, kneels by her chair, puts a tender hand on her knee.
God brought us here, Mare.
Calvin, seriously, listen.
This place is a gift. God has brought us here and he wants us to stay. Maybe that older man, Bob, I think his name is, maybe he's got medication you can use. This is not the Middle Ages.
Meredith looks at him.
Yes, it is, Cal. It is the Middle Ages.
Honey, please.
They drilled holes in the heads of the mentally ill back then. It's worse than that now.
These people aren't going to persecute you. They're just like us. They're just as scared. All they want is to protect what they got, make a safe place to live.
Meredith shivers.
Exactly, Cal. And that's why they're going to do exactly what I would do if I was them, and I learned somebody in their midst was a mental defect.
Now stop it. Stop talking that way. You ain't no defect. The good Lord has helped us to get this far, and he's going to see us through.
Calvin, please,
pray with me, Mare.
He takes her hand, cups it in his weathered fingers, bows his head. His voice softens.
Dear Lord, we ask for your guidance in this difficult time. Lord, we trust in you. You are our rock and protection. Lead us and guide us.
Meredith looks down, her brow furrowed with pain, her eyes welling up again. Her lips are moving, but Calvin is not sure whether she's mouthing a prayer or mumbling something far more cryptic and personal.